Good afternoon. It's the weekend edition for Christmas on Soundbites. Hopefully everybody's going to get that great 1 gigahertz or better computer tomorrow evening, or at least hoping for it. But we're here to answer your questions this Saturday afternoon. The whole crew is here, ready and waiting, so dial us up, 263-994. You can also catch us on TV. We're back live, folks, so it's not a bad rerun. So get those computer questions ready to go, as we're sitting here waiting to take your calls on Soundbites. Yeah, welcome to this edition of Soundbites Saturday afternoon. My name is Dave Enright.
I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Tony Casillo.
And we're here to answer your questions. Don't forget, if you folks got a question, call up at 263-994. We're also available on the web at soundbites.org. So if you've got a question, email it to us and we'll try to get back to you as soon as we can. Being the holiday season, I know for all of us it's quite hectic. But let's briefly go into the news. And Nick, what do you got?
Well, I think we're going to do something that's a tad bit different for the holiday. We have discovered that polyphenolic compounds found in chocolate may protect against coronary disease.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
chocolate.
Ladies and gentlemen.
No one is better.
Polyphenolic compounds are widely distributed in fruits and vegetables and protect against coronary heart disease. Procyanidin, a biologically active polyphenolic compound, is found in chocolate. In a study, chocolate was fed to a group of volunteers to test the hypothesis that procyanids promote long-term cardiovascular benefits. To cut to the chase, they do. Apparently, depending on whether or not the chocolate you buy commercially has a lot of procyanidin in it, it varies widely in commercial brands of chocolate, but if you have chocolate with a lot of procyanidin in it, it protects against heart disease. So eat lots of chocolate and stay healthy.
Rot your teeth out, but you won't have a heart attack.
Well, shouldn't they be pushing that for the Easter season, though, and Valentine's?
Well, you'd think so. I just thought that this was the kind of story we really needed to talk about.
Yeah.
Well,
the holidays.
Before, they've always known that red wine has been good for your heart. So, I said, drink red wine and eat chocolate.
And beer. They were discovering beer is good for you.
Wait a minute. You can take the chocolate and dip it in the wine.
Okay, now we really need to move on.
That works.
You know what the five major food groups are, don't you?
Yeah, well.
Well, you have chocolate, caffeine, alcohol, sugar,
beer, and pizza,
And fats, yes.
Yeah. Steve, what's going on in the Mac world?
Mac Central and ZDNet have published a couple of articles, a series of articles on what Apple can do to get Wall Street to like them better. Apple's annual 10K filing came out last week, and the company as a whole is doing very well. Sales are way up, nearly $8 billion in sales last year, 31% higher than the year before. Unit sales are way up. Profits are nearly the same. So it's interesting that as a company they're doing great, but their stock is doing terrible. Apple did announce that they expect their first quarter, which ends December 31st, to be a little slow. And some of that is because of Macworld San Francisco coming up in January on the 9th through the 12th. People are holding off on some of their purchases to see what gets announced at Macworld. So the analysts are hoping that the Apple comes out with faster computers because of the perceived difference between an Apple G4 at 500 megahertz, where the Intel crowd is running at 1,000 megahertz, even though that the G4 runs about as fast, if not faster, than the Intel, even though it has a smaller number. So it's a marketing problem that Apple has got to get past.
Yeah, I'm interested to see too when OS X comes out, because we're all in the business and we know that realistically the Mac architecture is superior to the Intel PC architecture as far as raw numbers go. And OS X being the Unix based back end is going to be, I think, is going to really do some wonderful things for Mac.
Right, OS X has an official release date of February 24th. And we assume they'll be showing off a lot of that at Macworld as well. Because of the Unix kernel in OS X, it will take exceptional advantage of the dual processing machines that are out now. Right now with OS 9, programs have to be custom written for dual processing. And most of the big programs, Photoshop, Final Cut, QuickTime, After Effects, all of the intensive programs have been modified for dual processing. But we're going to see a huge speed boost when OS X is finally released.
And Tony.
Yeah. PC makers are bracing for an ugly season. Gateway has released an announcement last week that a dire warning in the drop of PC sales, and that's a major contribution to the dive in the stock market we saw last week in the high-tech industry. The day after the announcement, Gateway stock fell 35%. So I'm wondering if that's more of a function of the market as it stands rather than the PC sales.
That's just what happened to Apple when they made their announcement.
Oh, sure. And it's Gateway says it's dramatically lowered its quarterly forecast based solely on Thanksgiving weekend sales, which were down 30% for a year ago. I think it's a case of we reached saturation or are approaching it in the PC market.
Right. Everyone has their computer, so the peripherals are doing hot this year.
Yeah. Exactly. It's going to, you know, the back end, the back office suite servers at that ilk is never going to change, but that's not the glamour, and that's not what Wall Street sees and the analyst sees. So the PC are going to be driving.
Yep. So anyways, it's going to be interesting, though, to see what really does turn out on that, because even some of the Comdex shows, they really haven't had any big whiz-bang things to throw out. I mean, it's all been
Incremental upgrades, not revolutionary changes.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to Linux World Expo at the end of the month to see what they have to say there.
Well, you have to let us know when you get back. On the virus world, folks, nothing new here, just more viruses to make your life a living. Anyways, they've got the Curse, and of course the Navidad is out there hitting. There's a number of them, though, that are geared towards Christmas Day. So we can't stress enough to get out there, and please, you know, get your virus DAT files updated, because these viruses just sit dormant. And if you're not updating your DAT files, I was already to two clients already this week, and they had virus software on there. But it was dated back like version 3.01. It was a certain lawyer, but I said I wouldn't mention his name, but he knows who he is out there.
It's the one that came with the computer, which a lot
exactly.
of people just
he's
do.
He's never updated, and right. he is an avid listener of sound bites. And I said to him, I says, what do we always tell you? If you haven't updated, then you're not running a virus program.
Exactly.
The other thing we should mention, too, is that there's a lot of holiday scams going on.
Yeah.
With internet shopping being even more popular this year, you can get email claiming to be, you know, from a store saying, we're just verifying your credit card number, or can you mail us back your credit card number, or something like that. Be very, very careful. Be sure who you're buying with. Only buy with reputable stores, and never send your credit card number through email. Always use the secure servers on the website when you place your order.
Okay.
You'll find a lot of, we have to tell people this. You'll start seeing a lot of, please verify your order, and that sort of thing.
We'll ship your order as soon as we get your credit card information.
Yeah, no. Okay, that's it. Let's move on to the calls. Okay, I want to remind you folks, you're listening to Soundbites on WXXI 1370 on the AM dial on
EOS.
EOS in Geneva.
FM 89.7.
Big TV. I mean, we're literally everywhere. We're tape delayed in Irondequoit and in Brighton.
Live on City Cable
so
12.
So dial us up at 263-994. That's 263-WXXI. And we're going to head right to the phones. And we've got Ron and Hilton. How are you doing, Ron?
Good, guys. Thanks. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, sir.
Too. Thank you. I've got a machine I'm using, Win98SC, and it seems to be after the initial start boot, if I go to open an Office document, see the hourglass run for a split second, and then it doesn't do anything. It doesn't open the dialog box. And I'll go to do a new Office document, and I'll get an error that says OSA9. And then after that, it says it'll perform an illegal operation, will be shut down. Then if I go back and do open Office document, it works like normal.
What version of Office is it?
It's Office 2000.
Have they released any patches for that one yet?
Yeah, well, I think they're in the works of it, because evidently he didn't see the sign on the box for ME that said, not me.
No. Because no, he's running 98.
98 SE.
Oh, I thought he said he was running ME.
No, 98, yeah. 98 SE and ME, it all sounds the same now.
Yeah, really. You might want to check the website. There are constantly coming out with a number of patches. I know there's been, I wish I could remember. There's a company that sends out tips And I know there has been a lot of patches and workarounds right now until Microsoft comes out with these patches to get around certain features within Office 2000.
Do you use the Office shortcut bar?
Yeah.
Okay, because the OS X is part of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you just, at the menu, type start and run and just type WinWord, does that crash it? Start, run, WinWord.
Don't know. I'll have to try that.
We could see if it's a problem in the shortcut.
The shortcut. That'll eliminate the shortcut.
But you might want to also just go up to the website and see if they get, you can go under their FAQs and see if anybody else is running into the same type of problems.
I had checked that a while back, and there wasn't anything out there.
You might want to check again, because if they're getting slammed with people, you know, constantly saying, you know, hey, this isn't working, Microsoft is naturally always, what product don't they patch?
Right.
Well, I don't know of an
Win 311.
Right.
Win 311.
Well, yeah. Well, that was the last version. It's just like everything else. There's not a version of DOS or anything else that came out that wasn't, you know, patched.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
You're saying it works the second time.
If I do a new Office document, then I get the error, and then when I go back and open an Office document through the Start menu, it'll do it. And then
I'm almost thinking it's time to reinstall Office. When was the last time you checked your antivirus software?
I update it usually weekly.
There might be a problem in your normal.dot. Which is the default Microsoft template. When you make a new document, it opens normal.dot.
Yeah, because the best thing to do with everybody, they can do it, is if they can get themselves out to a DOS prompt and go where that normal DOT is, and do a trib space normal.dot, or a trib space plus R space normal.dot. It makes it read-only. That way, no viruses in that can attack it. Because being, you know, being able to read it in, viruses can pull it in, change it, and that's how it infects it.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the patches, believe it or not, for Word and that, just change the attribute on that normal DOT to read only.
What you might want to do, Ron, is rename that file yourself to something else, and the next time Word launches, it will make a new clean one and see if there's a problem or some sort of corruption inside that new. Because when you use the open command, it doesn't load that normal.dot.
I see.
Okay?
Okay.
Take
Very
it
good.
Easy.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, next we'll go to Warren in Penfield. How you doing, Warren?
Hi, good. How's everybody?
Great.
Nick, I'm glad to see you're back.
Thanks, Warren.
And
I don't know if we want to. Is it still scarred?
Yeah, no, I am. I still can't put the headphones over that ear, but I'm doing
pretty
good. Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, happy holidays anyhow.
You too.
Dave, last spring I had you update my computer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you put in a hard drive and a new motherboard and... In,
the whole ball of wax.
Whole ball of wax, and we put it in our rewritable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be darned, the darn things disappeared on me. it was working fine, and I can't, well, it shows up on the device manager under CD-ROM controllers, where it used to be with the other CD-ROM that I had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, under the CD-ROM heading, and then the Matsushita and the Mitsumi were listed. Now they're separate, one under the controllers and the other under CD-ROM. And when I go into the device manager view device, well, even in the regular, it's got a yellow, what is that?
Exclamation point.
Exclamation point, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I go in and try and see what's going on. It says this device is either not present, not working properly, or does not have all the drivers installed.
Have you tried, where, you know, it's got that yellow explanation.
Yes.
Have you tried removing it, shutting the machine down, booting it back up, and letting Windows refind it?
Well, now, yes, what I did is I put it under disable.
And No.
Do it under remove?
You got to remove it.
Okay.
Remove it.
Okay.
Shut the machine down, reboot. Because it is a plug-and-play device.
Oh, it is plug-and-play. Okay.
And it should refine it, and hopefully it'll find the drivers. If not, you might want to reinstall the software for it, too.
You may actually have to do down to a cold boot, too, rather than just a straight reboot.
Does the tray still come in and out?
Yes.
So that's still getting power.
Yeah, and it lights up when it's going, you know, the busy sign there.
Well, give that a shot, and let me know, though, because otherwise bring it on down the shop, and we'll gladly take a look at it.
Okay, because I don't have the driver CD for it.
Okay. Yeah, no, you shouldn't with it. With 98, you don't usually need it.
Okay, well, I put 98 in after you did it, but that's why I wanted to be sure you knew that.
No
Maybe
problem.
That had a problem with it, you know.
No.
Okay, I'll try that way.
Okay, thanks much. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
And we're going to go over to my section of town, Diane in Brighton. How you doing?
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Let's see. I have a computer that I need to give away to somebody. It's an older Macintosh. Is there a place that might use it?
Veterans, Vietnam veterans.
Or Steve Ray's. Do I know some guy?
Yeah, there was, what's his name? Mike Marone at Josh Slotkin High School.
He's full.
How old of a Mac is it?
Probably about 5 years.
Okay. Do you remember what number it is?
No.
Because there is also Andy at Threshold.
Yeah.
He is also gladly accepting computers, too. Threshold is on St. Paul, downtown. But if you give them a call at Threshold and ask for Andy, he'll gladly come over and pick it up.
There's also Microcycle at Nortel, which is it's a community program they run inside of Nortel where they take in machines, refurbish them, and then donate them back to the community. There's also a couple of used resellers, Computer Renaissance and Rochester Computer Recycling. They might give you some money for it rather than as a tax donation. Although I think... No, I don't remember the last time I talked to them.
But check them out and let us know how you make out.
You might even want to throw it up on eBay. You know, it costs you $2 to post a listing on eBay. You might make $20-$30 for it.
Okay. And these are all in the phone book?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, except eBay, which is at eBay.com.
Yeah, right.
I have to tell you a quick little story about eBay. I run a web server from which you can download old radio shows.
Cool.
The Shadow.
Amos and Andy?
I haven't got enough space. If somebody wants to donate a 40-gig hard drive,
do you know anyone that has the CBS Radio Mystery Theater?
No, and I know a couple people who've got some of it. I'll put up anything I can afford. I can only afford a 2-gig hard drive.
I think my father-in-law has got those tapes. Remember when they were selling them?
A client of mine wants.
But I've got The Shadow, Doc Savage, and The Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple people wrote to me today. Apparently somebody is on eBay selling the Doc Savage tapes.
That they downloaded from you.
That they downloaded from me and put them on half a dozen CDs, and they're selling them for like, you know, 40, 50 bucks. And I thought, the problem is, I blame my parents. They taught me a sense of ethics and honesty that apparently I am having trouble getting away from.
Well, see, the whole, you know, you were saying the whole thing with Doc Savage and The Shadow is no one knows who owns the copyright.
Well, Street and Smith own The Shadow, and I wrote to them 2 years ago when I put up my site and said, is it okay if I do this? And I never heard from them.
Oh, well.
And these particular Doc Savage, I probably shouldn't say this on the radio, came from NPR. And I wrote to NPR and said, is it okay if I put these up? And I never heard back from them. So I think they...
You will now.
Well, that's fine. If they tell me to take them down, I will gladly take them down. But nobody's claiming copyright on them.
Oh, well.
How old are they, too?
The Doc Savage stuff is from the 70s, but the Shadow stuff is the original radio broadcasts.
Yeah.
And nobody's claiming copyright on them, so I've got them up there for free. What the heck?
There you go. Hey.
Testbox.cob.rit.edu. Go for it. Knock yourself out.
Which happens to run on Red Hat.
It does run on Red Hat.
I just want to remind your callers. We've got some open lines. Call us up at 263-994. That's 263-9. Did I? 9994?
There you go.
And 263-WXXI. That's easier for me.
Right? Right.
And we'll go on over to Bill in Greece. How you doing, Bill?
Great. Happy holidays.
Same to you, sir.
My question's about my Windows 98 Second Edition screensaver and sleep. Screensaver, I've got it loaded in, and it works for 2 or 3 days maybe, or not even a whole day if I'm in and out a lot. And then it just forgets. And I noticed that, you know, when it's working and I wake up the desktop again, the screensaver is down in the taskbar, grayed out.
Why don't you turn that screen energy saver off?
Okay.
Well,
that never works.
Yeah. What you got to do is go into the control panel under energy devices. There is a it normally defaults to 15 minutes for the monitor, 1 hour for the hard drive. Yeah. I turn them both to never.
Oh, really? Okay, because that's the other thing that's never worked.
Yeah, I turn them to never.
There's also a setting in your BIOS, and if your BIOS doesn't support computer sleeping, then the control panel can't work.
Or it could, at very best, cause conflict.
Yeah, lockups and everything else.
It should be.
There's always been sort of an iffy problem of the machines waking up. So I try to never use computer sleep or hard drive sleep. Most of the monitors have a sleep built into the monitor itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into the BIOS, usually it's under energy saving devices, or under power, and it'll be energy saving. You get it's enabled. You can just usually hit the page up or page down, plus or minus, and that will disable it.
Disable it, huh?
Yeah, get rid of it.
So could the two have an interaction? I mean, could the fact that I've got it set for going to sleep,
yeah,
could that screw up the...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's Windows. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
It's a feature, right, Dave?
There you go. It's, always.
It's weird. I've got a little sleep button on my keyboard, and I push the little sleep button, and the little window comes up, says preparing to go to sleep, and then the screen goes dark, and then immediately the desktop comes right back again.
You might also have something set to wake the machine up. Are you on a network, or do you have a modem installed?
I got a modem, sure, yeah.
There's also a setting in the BIOS to wake if the modem senses activity.
Oh.
Basically set so if you get a fax or someone calls you on the modem, the computer will wake up and receive that call.
Okay.
So the modem is always sitting there, a call yet? Anybody got a call yet? Got a call yet? Got a call yet? Okay. So that could be waking the machine up immediately.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah, okay, so I'll check this BIOS thing.
Okay, check it out and let us know how you make out.
Yeah, okay.
Next we go to John in the city watching us on City 12. How you doing, John?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Yeah, we're doing great.
Yeah, my question's about my CD rewriter. Up until maybe about a month ago, I was able to write a CD, but now when it's going to close the CD, my hard drive hangs and then eventually says that there was an error writing the CD.
Did you recently change to a lower quality of CDR discs?
No, I've been using the same.
How many discs have you burned? Copied and they erased from your hard drive, copied to the hard drive, erased from the hard drive. You might need to defragment your hard drive.
I did that. I just reformatted my hard drive, my computer, too.
What else are you... okay, first couple of questions.
I try to close down everything in the background I can.
Okay, is this an IDE or a SCSI CD writer?
IDE.
And is it on the same chain as your hard drive?
No.
You mean the second CD-ROM drive? You're going from CD to CD?
Mm-hmm.
Is it on the same chain as your regular CD?
Yes.
That's bad.
Bingo! That's a problem.
That's bad. The reason is that only one device can be active on each IDE chain at a time. So what happens is the system has to shut down the reader, start up the writer, shut down the writer, start up the reader, shut down the reader, start up the writer. Eventually you end up with a buffer underrun.
Yes, I've been getting those. Yeah. I've gotten those errors too.
If you put the device you're reading from on a different chain from the device you're writing to, your problems should go away.
Oh, they will.
So, like, put the hard drive and the CD reader on one chain, put the CD writer on the other chain.
Well, or put the hard drive...
Well, it depends if you're going to be writing from the hard drive as well as writing from the CD reader.
The basic idea is try to put the CD writer on a separate chain from anything you're going to read from.
Yeah, because if he's got two hard drives in there, one and the other can be... But as long the key thing is getting the CD-ROM and the CD burner on separate chains. And that should alleviate most of your problems.
Okay, I've been going insane for a while. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Sure.
We can't help you with that, but we can certainly fix your problem with the CD.
Have a good weekend.
You too, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay. Next, we'll go to Elliot watching us again on City Cable 12. How you doing?
Oh, not bad. Got a question for Tony.
Excellent. Our Linux expert.
It's really not a problem, but I'm wondering what happened to the 2.4 kernel on Linux?
Basically, nothing has happened to it. Linus has not said it's released in prime time. We're right at 2.4 pre-release 10.
10?
10, pre-release 10.
Oh, you should laugh!
Yeah,
oh,
no, really?
No, we've never gone to 10.
No, you go to 4.7.j. left elbow.
Basically,
drop your knee.
There were some issues, mostly in three areas. In SCSI support on the high-end SCSI buses, the journaling file system hasn't shaken itself out as to which one is going to be used, and Silicon Graphics released their journaling file system out, so that will, as open source as a matter of fact, and that's possibly the most robust, but they had to put it into the kernel, and Linus has to vet it along with Alan Cox, and there was one other, USB was still not up to what he thought was released.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not what he was happy with. So it's
oh, well, what?
Yeah.
I mean,
he's very much
A perfectionist.
Yeah, he's a perfectionist. He's a coder.
He's not like Microsoft. No. Ship it and we'll worry about the bugs later.
No.
We will release no operating system before it's time.
Yeah, I have played with kernel 2.4. Basically, don't worry about it unless you're running multiprocessor boxes. That's the big thing. Multiprocessor support for more than 16 processors.
So,
okay, I don't have to worry about that for a couple of years.
So yeah. Red Hat 7.0 would have most of the new items coming in 2.4?
Yeah, Red Hat 7.0, when it ships and when you install it, it installs the kernel headers for 2.4. It's built right as it stands to accept a 2.4 kernel when it becomes fully released. Like I said, I use Red Hat, and I've played with the 2.4 kernel, and it's nice, but it's, on a desktop, on a workstation environment, you really don't need it. The 2.2.16 is fine. The only real advantages you get with 2.4 that I'm going to see is the Racer file system, which you don't really need any kind of journaling file system on a workstation.
Well, and then there's the multi-threaded stack for the Ethernet.
Right, yeah, and web server embedded into the kernel, but that's, you know.
Right.
Average user, for the average Linux user, 2.2.16 and it's 2.2.18 is even out now, which is fine. I don't run new kernels until, you know, production boxes until they've shaken themselves out for about 6 months.
So, but Red Hat 7.0 is
phenomenal.
Only 16, isn't it?
It's 2.2.16 as it ships by default. There is a 2.2.18 kernel out now that has been vetted and approved.
Yeah, but don't get all nuts about the numbers. I mean, when you get down to the 0.06, 0.08 difference, there's not a major difference. And trust me when I tell you that 7 works great.
Okay, yeah. Including USB.
USB keyboards and mice work just fine. Okay. Some of the weirder USB peripherals, no. But
I'm having a little trouble getting my Pilot
to work with it. But I know people with USB cameras, which is always the worst one. They work fine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm primarily interested in.
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks.
Take it easy. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Next, we go to Judy in Spencerport. How are you doing, Judy?
I'm doing great. I have a problem that's perplexing me with a machine that I have at work that I was trying to move from one user to another. And you don't need all the gory details. I was trying to put an old virus scan on it because I know it has the W97M marker virus on it. And and then I was going to run a scan disk and defrag. But what I now have is a machine that when it boots up, I get a series of three errors. The first one is a VSH Win32.
Can you share?
And then the second one is WebScanX. And then when I get rid of those, I am left with an AV console, all of them causing exception in...
Sounds like you tried to remove a virus program or you tried to install one and didn't finish?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, both WebScanX and AV console, AV stands for antivirus.
Mm-hmm.
So those two programs are in there trying to do something. So I think Steve is right. Either you tried to overwrite a newer version of an antivirus program with an older one, or you tried to remove one and it was unsuccessful, or you tried to overwrite, for example, Norton with McAfee.
Or sometimes I also see it, though, also if you try to install it, some of these viruses will protect themselves and not allow you to install the antivirus to get rid of them.
Right. You have to boot from the disk that comes in the virus package.
Yep.
Right. Your best shot at this point, Judy, is to go out and buy a commercial version of McAfee, if that's your one of choice. And that will come with a boot disk. Run the boot disk against the system, which will then clean it all out.
Or if you have another working disk that or working computer that you know is virus-free, the virus programs usually have a create boot disk command in them.
Right.
And will make
I have used those.
Yeah.
So, I can't go in and get rid of the virus program itself because obviously that's the one that's causing the problem. I need to.
You can try to uninstall sounds like it's something is wrong.
First, you want to clean out the virus itself. That's first.
And she's got a first boot from a clean bootable, write protected boot disk.
Right.
Before she's going to be able to get rid of any of this stuff.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Okay?
Start there, Judy. Sorry.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank
Good
you
luck.
Very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Tell you what, we're going to just take a minute here and go to the poll of the week. And, Nick, how are you standing on that?
Well, it's pretty interesting. Last week's poll, for the last couple of weeks, I've been asking people, you know, sort of what they want for Christmas. This last one was, my computer is too slow. A total of 156 of you voted. I really appreciate that. 52% of you, 52.5% of you said yes, and 47.4% of you said no, which is interesting when you think about the slowdown in the computer industry. Mm-hmm. Half the people out there are satisfied with the speed of their machine.
I'm just upgrading mine.
Well, one guy wrote to me and said, you know, nobody's happy with the polls. One guy wrote to me and said, third choice, it used to be too slow, now it's not. This week's poll, I thought I'd go a little different, and I'm asking people if you sent out any electronic greeting cards this year. And the question is, how many? 0 to 5, and zero means none, folks. They don't have to write to me and say, I left out the none option. Anywhere from 0 on up, and that'll give you, I'd like to know what that's about. So far, we've got 17 people who voted, and the 0 to 5 seems to be the number one thing. I've got a little deal going on Ask Nick, where you can actually give Ask Nick to somebody else for Christmas.
Neat.
That seems
cool.
To be going pretty well. It's a nice last minute gift. Now
there you go.
You do it now and it's done. You don't have to even send them anything. It's all automated.
You're gonna give me Ask Nick for Christmas?
Am I going to give you Ask Nick for Christmas? We'll talk.
I'm going to say one of the problems with the electronic greeting cards is that there are viruses and password scammers that masquerade as greeting cards. Someone just sent you a Red Hill greeting, and it's not Blue Mountain, which is the real company.
Right.
The other thing we want to talk about, though, is the web ring.
It was interesting. Somebody actually joined the web ring this morning. We are running a web ring, and basically it's a list of all the people who've signed up for the web ring, and they get to be part of the Soundbites family. Just declare your affiliation, your love of Soundbites, by joining the web ring. It's really simple. Go to the main page, www.soundbites.org. You'll see a giant web ring logo there, and a fairly large hyperlink says join the Soundbites web ring. When you do, you get to another page where you can list the sites that are there, go to one of the sites, or just join the thing. If you join, it asks for a title and a description, some keywords, and where the main page is of your website. And if it's different, the page that you're going to put the web ring on. Okay. And then it asks you for some special stuff, passwords, things like that. And then it mails you the code you need to put onto your web page.
It's really easy.
You put the code on, and then at some time I will go look at that page, and if the code is there, I will activate you and you become part of the web ring. And then every once in a while, I'll go back and check to see if the code is still there and keep you on the web ring. So far, we've got 15 people who have joined the web ring. I have 2 who are waiting to join the web ring and have not, in fact, at this point, put the code on. It's a very simple little table that just says the Soundbites web ring and the next one and the...
Yep.
Random one and like that. So it's not a big deal, and it takes about 5 minutes to do. So we'd love to have you declare yourself a member of the Soundbites family and join our web ring at www.soundbites.org.
Does that mean we can come to your house for Christmas dinner?
If you can find it and we're home and my wife doesn't hurt you.
I don't want to go there.
It's the Soundbites family. Come here for Christmas.
Okay, folks, we remind you that's the update for the poll of the week, and now let's get back to the calls. Want to remind you, folks, you're listening to Soundbites, WXXI, 1370 the AM dial. You can dial us up at 263-994.
You missed the
994.
I'm
994 leaves them listening to the ether.
Or 263 WXXI. See, I like that better.
Yeah.
That rolls better. 9999. You're afraid you're going to roll off too many nines. With that, let's go to Paul in the city, where he's watching us on TV, so he doesn't have to worry about listening to us on the radio. Or that could be weird, though, if
so
we're out
smooth.
Of sync. I know it.
I'm
a rookie at this, and you've done a lot longer. I'm picking at Nick. Hold on.
I'm loving this. Go.
Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Great. Hey, see, Nick, Paul, just let me interrupt for a minute. Nick is just jealous because at first he thought I was going to be in real deep water because I touched the board and all the lights started from
there.
You've been listening for the last 11 years. You know that every time Dave sits at the board, there is some sort of massive technical screw-up.
No, Nick calls a hat.
I do. This morning he sat down, the board wasn't working, the computer wasn't working. He's sitting there swearing. He has some very colorful language. Now we know why they call them cursors. He was sitting there working away. Finally, about 2 minutes before the show started, everything started to work and he was fine.
Thanks, I guess. Thanks to John in the back room.
Yeah,
who
thanks to John.
Pushed the right button.
God bless John. Exactly right.
What can we do for you?
Well, listen, I have a Compact Armada, about 4 years old. And it's been running Windows 95 all that time, and it's been the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
But now I find out that...
Now you have to go screw it up by doing something.
Well, they're not going to support it, I guess, anymore, are they?
No.
Yeah, so I have a Windows...
Well, not support means that if you call them with a question, they won't answer it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the number is no longer around.
Right, it doesn't mean the machine will suddenly stop working.
Yeah, what's different? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
True.
I have a Windows 98 upgrade CD,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to run it, and I got pretty far along, but then it gave me a generic installer error, and it says message SU99405, and then something.
Yeah, it's, you're trying to do an upgrade to what version of Windows 95 are you running?
Oh, boy. I'm not sure how to figure that out.
You'd have to go into the control panel under systems, and that first page will show you what version of 95 you're running. Second of all, how much disk space do you have on it, and what processor are you running?
I have a Pentium processor.
Okay. How much memory?
94, I think.
96, maybe?
96 it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
How much free disk space?
That's a good question. Probably not as much as I should.
Well, the Windows installer wants a couple hundred megs.
Yeah, at least 230 megs?
Well, it's a 1 gig hard drive, and it's probably getting close to full.
That's probably a part of your problem, too, is you're just running out of disk space.
So it sounds
did
like
you tell it to keep the old Windows or to replace the old Windows?
I told it to replace it.
All right. Well, it still has to install the new one first, then it deletes the old one.
Oh, I see.
Maybe you didn't hear my segue, you know, coming into the show. Maybe that should be tops on your Christmas list. It's not too late. You can go out and get that 1 gigahertz machine because Soundbites just told you it's not worth updating. And, you know, now you'll have all the bells and the whistles. You get it with 128 meg of memory, say a 45 gig hard drive, 17-inch monitor, and away you go.
Well, okay, then a question. If I were to get a new laptop, I'd want to get a Linux. Is that possible?
Oh, sure. You know, the one I'm sitting here right now runs Linux. It's an old Toshiba. It runs fine.
You can get them from companies that give them pre-installed.
Yeah, Dell pre-installs it if you ask.
Mm-hmm.
On their higher end Inspirons. There is a company called TuxTops that makes some really rock solid laptops. Mm-hmm. You know, they use real hardware. IBM will ship it to you on one of their laptops, except the modem doesn't work. But that's, you know, that's no big deal.
That's a feature for IBM.
Yeah, well, it's an embedded chipset that's Windows only. But
it's a Wave chipset that nobody supports.
That nobody does, even IBM doesn't. But yeah, it's
it's true.
It's really, you know, Linux has become, and it, you know, any flavor has become very stable on laptops. This thing runs just fine. Matter of fact, this runs Linux better than it does Windows because the memory management's better.
So what's my hope of putting it on the Armada that I have?
On the Armada that you have?
What?
Yeah. Great. This, just for an example, this is a Pentium 133 with 32 megs of RAM,
mm-hmm.
that I'm using right here.
And it flies along. 32. I've been watching.
32 megs. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it says Pentium with 80.0 megs of RAM.
See, a lot of other operating systems, even Unix and a bunch of the others, don't need the overhead like Windows does.
Uh-huh.
There's, you know, so many of them out there, they run fine. Matter of fact, what's that other Windows-based program? It's not, I don't want to call it Windows. GemWorks.
Yeah.
Wasn't it GemWorks?
Sure.
Used to run, you could run
GeoWorks.
GeoWorks, thank you. And you could run it on a 16 meg machine, an old 286, and it used to fly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There is other worlds except Windows.
There are some websites that talk about Linux on
laptops,
and you can probably get to them. I'm at Linux Online right now. Linux on a laptop, www.linux.org/hardware/laptop.html.
That's difficult.
And it lists specific laptops.
I'm looking now for Compact Armada. What model Armada?
The 4200 series.
The four. Well, of course, that one's not listed. It's not. I have 4120, but I don't have 4200.
See, the thing is, the difference between with some of these laptop names, it's right. Like 4200 is hard drive size or something like that.
Well, right.
Yeah, it'll work. Fine.
But check those out and see what you come up with. There is a whole section on Compaq.
And, okay. And to try to get your 98 working, make sure you have at least 300 megs of free disk space before you run the installer
minimum.
Again.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. And next we move to Chris in Brighton. How you doing, Chris?
Real well, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Along the lines of your poll, my computer's too slow.
Well, there you go. You need a new one.
But,
Merry Christmas.
See, that's one issue for sure. But the other is my brother-in-law says, well, the heck with it. Just reformat the whole thing, which he did to his. And he's spent the better part of a day at it, and he's still not finished.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially wiped out the whole thing and tried to reinstall it.
It's not hard. It's just tedious. I mean, it takes forever.
I'm redoing mine, and I was 4 hours last night just figuring out I got a bad hard drive now.
Mm-hmm. A lot depends on why it's slow. Is your hard drive too small? Is your hard drive too slower hard drive? Do you have enough memory? Do you have enough of this and that?
Well, I've upgraded over the years. I have a Pentium 1, 200 megahertz Toshiba machine. I always add toys on now and again, and I'm sure it slows that slows it down. But it says I'm 56% free on my hard drive. I think it was a 10 meg, etc.
When's the last time you did a defrag?
Defrag doesn't seem to take on the thing. It goes forever. It says it doesn't need to, for one. And then when you attempt to do it anyways, it just hangs up.
Well, probably because of all the things that you have running down in the system.
Try running it in DOS mode or in safe mode. So there's nothing else running in the background.
They think the safe mode's way to go.
Yeah. But if you've been running a machine for a few years and putting programs on and taking programs off,
it's a good idea to wipe
get cluttered up.
One of the biggest things you run into is programs when you install them put entries into the registry.
Right.
And when you uninstall them, oftentimes they don't clean their entries out.
90% of them I get to say they say they uninstall them, and I can go into the registry where I don't recommend most folks to go. And find them there.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is the Windows registry loads into memory every single time.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen registries like, 6 megabytes in size. They're huge.
Yeah.
You've probably installed programs you don't use anymore.
That's right.
So it's, every couple years, it doesn't hurt to do a reformat and reinstall.
So it's the long weekend. You got, Christmas and all that. You can...
it's a good project for a weekend.
Play around with that. And then if that doesn't work, it's justification to go out and buy a new one.
Well, that's the other issue, which is out of frustration. I said to myself, you can buy some... cheap machines this time of year, and
one warning: get what you pay for.
Yeah, be very wary of machines that are too cheap.
Yeah,
they break in a year, you throw them away and buy a new one because they're so cheap.
Okay, let's move on.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
You're welcome. Bye. Next, we go to Tom in Fairport. How you doing, Tom?
Afternoon, good gentlemen. How are you?
Oh, we're doing ducky.
You were mentioning something about radio mystery theaters earlier.
Yeah,
You know there's a site, don't you?
There are a bunch of sites. I just don't know them off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
I was going to get him some later. Do you have that? Go for it.
Yeah, CBS Mystery Radio Theater is argonath.utah.edu/CBSOTR.
On the air.
And that's got almost everything, and including, apparently these all came from NPR.
Super.
And they're copyrighted.
Well, they come from CBS. ARG?
ARGONATH.
.utah.edu/CBSOTR,
And there's 1,700 of them on there.
Yeah, there's a million web rings. Yeah. There's a million sites out there. They're all on web rings.
Yeah, and he's got MP3 on there and everything.
Yeah.
That's the big thing when I was a kid, listen to the CBS radio before I went to bed.
Me too. Remember it well.
Okay. Go ahead. You got a question?
I had another actual question, and it's a software question, and I don't know whether you like to answer it or not.
Go ahead. We'll give
it
a shot.
All of a sudden, I cannot get Quicken to operate. I get the password thing, but no screen comes up. The Quicken program, rather, doesn't come up. But I get a following screen which says there are too many Quicken programs open. Well, there's nothing open. Now, is this a matter of uninstalling?
Yeah.
There's a lock file. When you open Quicken, it writes a little file to your hard drive that says somebody's using this program. So that if you had put it on a network... and somebody else tried to update it while you were doing something, it wouldn't screw it up.
They wouldn't let you, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
What it sounds like is that the last time you actually used it, when you shut it down, it didn't shut down correctly.
Yeah, that's possible.
And then therefore, it did not erase that lock file.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is, I don't know what that lock file is called.
You'd have to. Usually, it has an extension of LCK.
Right. Usually, it does. So, if you look in the Quicken directory and see if there's a .lck.
Okay.
If not, then you're probably going to have to go to the Quicken website and search for lock file.
You may be able to uninstall and reinstall.
Okay.
Yeah, but then you might lose
stuff. That's what I'm concerned about.
Make sure your data files are backed up.
I made two or three entries the other day and didn't bother to back it up, but, you know, I've got the paperwork, so that's no problem. But just look. Now, if I, in fact, find the .lck file.
Try renaming them. In other words, rename them if it's, say, quicken.lck.
Yeah.
Just rename it quicken.underscore.ck.
Okay.
Right.
And see if
don't delete it.
No,
because
just rename them.
Yeah, just rename it.
Yep.
Okay, good enough.
Okay, take it easy. Have a good holiday.
You too. Bye.
Next, we go to Paul in the city watching us on City Cable 12. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi. Happy holidays.
Yeah, same to you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, I've been running Windows 95, and as previous caller said, you know, even Microsoft is telling people, you know, it's old, buggy, and antiquated, and they tell you to upgrade.
Mm-hmm. This is the same program that told you for years was the hottest thing in North America, and you'd never have to change.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, my policy is, you know, conservative policy. If the vendor tells you it's old and antiquated, you know, believe them.
Yeah.
I've upgraded to Red Hat 7, and things are...
Well, that's not what they intended.
But definitely. But it shows intelligence.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is... the problem is, you know, I haven't been brave enough to completely switch over, so I'm dual booting.
That's fine.
I have Roadrunner, and that's relevant because the problem is I lost sound on Windows 95 when I was playing around with the Ethernet cards.
Mm-hmm.
But the sound works in Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what did I do to screw up sound on Windows 95?
Don't know what you did on Windows 95, but...
Pretend to win ads when he put in the... went to do the Roadrunner, you put in a NIT card. What happens is the network card and 10-to-1-odds, your sound card, both want the same interrupt.
Right. And how come they both work in Linux?
Because Linux is smarter at handling. It's not tied to, you know, the IRQs as much as the Windows 95 is, or 98. I mean, that's always a big-time problem.
One of the things, too, if it's set as a plug-and-play in the BIOS, and Windows being a plug-and-play OS, Windows will determine which IRQs it wants stuff on.
Yeah.
Linux will read what the BIOS says the cards are on.
Yeah.
So if Windows thinks that these cards are still on, IRQ 10 is usually the big culprit. One of the things you can start with is turn off plug-and-play in your BIOS and tell your BIOS you do not have a plug-and-play OS. That way the operating system is required to use what the BIOS says the IRQs are.
Right, and in your device manager, remove your sound card, all the bits and pieces and different devices related to the sound card, and then let Windows re-detect it, and it will reassign whatever the new IRQ got changed to on the Linux side.
Okay.
Right?
The real problem here is, and everybody should know this, if you have any one device in your system that is not plug-and-play, you don't have a plug-and-play system.
Mm-hmm.
So you might as well turn it off in the BIOS and manage everything directly because there will be conflicts.
Oh, okay. That's the problem then.
There you go.
Because Red Hat didn't like the plug-and-play, so I forced the card to be...
Yeah. You're gonna have to, if you're going to swap back and forth, you're going to have to turn that on and off.
Okay, so in BIOS, I turned it off all that.
Yeah, tell it no plug-and-play.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Good. Next, we go to our favorite listener, Art in Brighton. How you doing, Art?
Art. Fine, guys. Merry Christmas.
Same to you,
too.
Sir.
Hey, you know, one of the previous callers reminded me that I tried safe mode, I tried DOS mode, and I've tried everything to get my C drive to defrag, and it won't. Everything's running fine, so I don't have a problem, but I...
What happens when you try?
I click on defrag, and it makes like it's going to do something. It'll show zero, and then it'll show 1%, and next thing you know, it drops back to zero, and it just hangs there.
Have you tried doing it in safe mode?
Yep, I've tried doing it in every...
How about the DOS prompt?
The DOS prompt I've tried.
Not DOS prompt, inside...
With 98, you can't do a defrag.
It doesn't include the DOS version of defrag.
That's right.
One of the things I've seen with that is if the system is very heavily fragmented, Microsoft's defrag has a problem with it.
Well, it is. I defragged it less than 2 months ago, and I don't do that much that it should require it. But I like to, you know, keep on top of the housekeeping if I think about it.
Have you run ScanDisk ahead of Defrag in Turo mode?
Even doing the deep surface check.
Yeah, the Turo mode.
It
should work.
I know. That's why I called you, because it still works. But what I'm looking for, what's a low-end version of the paint program that comes with Windows? I'd like something that would have a little more file format capabilities and switching.
PaintShop Pro. $70, and it does almost everything Photoshop does.
Well, plus you can download a trial version from PaintShop Pro that lets you try it, I think, for 45 days, so you can test it out before you buy.
There's also one that I personally am very familiar with called the GIMP. The GIMP has been ported to Windows.
No!
Yes.
I have to get it.
Yes, www.gimp.org, and it's been port, and there's a Windows port. That thing is as good as Photoshop, and anybody that's used it will agree with you.
I love GIMP, but I don't have it at work because I don't have a
good hardware. It's very robust, but like any piece of software, the more it can do, the more complex it is. So, if you're not very heavily into image editing, Photoshop is fine.
Actually, this isn't really image. It's just like changing colors in a logo or something that. Not even photo work.
Image editing, not just photos. Yeah, but
right.
PaintShop Pro is a really, really good program.
PaintShop Pro. And what's it run normally, roughly?
70, less than 100, I know that.
So it would be as good or better than CorelDRAW.
No. Corel is right up there for illustration and doing.
But then those things require a learning curve that I'm don't want to invest
pretty
in.
Pretty significant one.
Yes.
Right. Okay, you guys are always helpful. I hope you do have a Merry Christmas and look forward to another year with you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Take
talk
it easy.
To you later.
Okay, next we go to Tom in Lima. How you doing, Tom?
Good. How you doing?
Great.
Hey, I'm trying to set up a Palm Pilot, a shared calendar on a Novell network. And what I did is installed the Palm Pilot software onto a shared drive on a Novell server, and then I synced that user with it, so all of her appointments now appear on the server on a shared drive. Then I went to her secretary's machine, and I installed the software also on that person's desktop so that she could see it and run it. And then I drilled down to that shared drive, but the calendar appears blank.
Yeah, but you know what is better? If you have, like, Microsoft Schedule, you can, within Palm Pilot, because you can set up calendars.
Right.
And you can set that up on the server. What you can do is then go into, set it up, install the software, and you, in the Palm Pilot, point the calendar and, say, datebook to, say, Microsoft Scheduler or Outlook.
Yeah, because Schedule and Outlook are designed to be multi-user. I don't think the Palm software is.
Yeah, no.
Well, the problem with the Palm software is that it works by username.
Yeah.
So if your pilot's name is Nancy, then it's going to go into a Nancy subdirectory or look for Nancy stuff. And if you try to bring up Fred's stuff, then you'll see nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to point it to another software package that is networkable.
Okay.
Have you been to the Knowledge Finder at the Palm site?
Yeah, I did. I spent some time looking through everything. I actually posted the question, and I followed all the steps that they've listed. You put in a subnet, and you check off network, and it's supposed to work, but of course it doesn't. So I'll try Outlook and set that up on the server.
Give it a shot. Let us know how you make out.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, next we go to Michael, who's listening to us on WEOS-FM in Ithaca.
Hi there. I've got a couple of problems. I got a gateway 366 megahertz with 164 megabytes at work. And as I'm working along doing different Windows applications, the memory starts to disappear, and eventually I'll get a window that says, you're dangerously low on resources, you must close a window.
Memory leak.
Now, I went into DOS, got out of the machine, booted it up into DOS, and tried to do a check disk, or a scan disk, check disk, and it doesn't do it, but it told me I only had 500 KBs of memory. But it...
That could be a virus.
Yeah, that could be a virus or a bad memory module. How much memory did the machine have in it?
Yeah,
how much memory do you think the machine has?
When you turn it on, doesn't it count the memory and tell you how much memory it's got in it?
It should have 164 megabytes.
Well, when you count it up, it should tell you that. And if it does not tell you that,
you could have been.
It tells you something else.
There is definitely, the virus thing is what I'm really thinking, because usually if you load any kind of DOS drivers, you get some factor below 640K, and usually you'll see 512K in a standard Windows 98 install. If there was a virus, and I don't remember it off the top of my head, that actually reports real mode memory as 500K.
Have you updated your virus protection lately?
Yeah, almost weekly.
Okay, the other thing then is, excuse me, what you might want to do is, if you're brave enough, pull the cover off of it and check the seating of the memory.
Okay.
Sometimes if they're not always snapped down.
But what if I go into the control panel and double click on system and then click on one of the tabs that says performance and it says 164 megabytes there, doesn't that, and then it tells you how much is available. Doesn't that mean it's reading 164?
Yeah, it should say, yeah. Yeah, okay. If you go on into, let's see, we go to start.
Yeah, it's right in the first tab under system.
Yeah, right in the system.
What program are you running that tells you you only have 500K?
Well, it's when I rebooted into DOS and tried to do a check disk like I did 10 years ago, and it said, you got to use scan disk in Windows, and then it rolled down some numbers, and then it said something about memory, and it said 500,000 KB, and I don't know what memory that was measuring. I thought it was a system memory. That's why.
No, it's probably looking at real and extended. There's two memory lines.
Right.
And if you're not running a memory manager for DOS, which Windows machines don't, it can't access the extended memory. But going back to the core of the problem, the Windows resources, Windows has a very little amount of RAM for resources, and several things accumulate resources. The number of different icons on your desktop, so take off icons, consolidate several things into a single folder, if you can.
Okay.
The number of fonts you have loaded, try to minimize, especially if you have something like CorelDRAW, as mentioned earlier, likes to load in 100 fonts or 200 fonts.
And that's a minimal install.
And that's a minimal install, yeah. Corel comes with, 15,000 fonts, and some people say install them all.
Yeah.
And then the number of things you have in your sys tray in the bottom right corner. So if you can minimize those things, that will help the resource problem, but there's nothing you can do to correct it except reboot, and that's what the error is telling you. I ran out of resources, reboot, and then we'll start all over again.
Right.
Okay. Well, we're going to try to get to one last call here.
Okay.
Let's go to Alonzo and watch this on City Cable 12. If you got a quick one, we'll try to get to you. Go ahead.
Yes, I have Virtual PC, and I'm trying to load Red Alert 2, and every time I push a stall, it says...
Sorry, I apologize. We tried to fit you in, but I'll tell you what...
Email it to us.
We'll be here next week, Saturday, taking all your computer questions. I want to thank the TV crew down in WXXI studio and John Andrews and the crew back there for doing a fantastic job. And for Nick, not harassing me too much, and Steve for letting me take the
controls. And don't forget the poll and the web ring.
And wish you all a happy new year, great holiday seasons, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah,
and
whatever.
Tony Placilla.
And thank you, Tony, for showing up and bringing up your holiday weekend. And thank you all, folks. See you next week.